Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We are back with another loaded episode. Apparently, there's five NFL teams most likely to disappoint this year. We'll discuss it. We'll each pick our three most underrated NFL players going into 2023. Is the Big Ten now the best college football conference? We're also going to preview the AFC East and more to get to, but joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad. Yep, we finally got our first taste of football this year. The Jets and the Browns Hall of Fame game, albeit we didn't see a lot of starters, but we did see a lot of rookies. So as we matriculate and move closer and closer to the season, I cannot wait.
I really enjoyed it, man. I love the Hall of Fame game. I think it's a great celebration of the NFL and the new class of Hall of Famers. I love all the interviews and the stories. I just enjoyed it, man. But the one thing I will say, just on a quick side note before we jump into these topics, that Jets team has got some really good young players. I think we knew that going into the year, but some of these rookies that got significant playing time, I like what I saw from some of these guys, Alex.
Yeah, we got our first look at Will McDonald from the side of the Jets and looking at that and what he's going to add to that pass rush. And we already know that's a pretty dominant looking defense over there. It's going to lead us into more talks when we get into our AFC East preview.
Yeah, you no doubt about it. We're going to jump into it later in the episode. Jets are definitely going to be a fun one. But let's get to some news here, Alex. Former Cleveland Browns running back Kareem Hunt is going to meet with the Indianapolis Colts. And apparently he's also visited with the New Orleans Saints. This is according to NFL insider Jordan Schultz. Sounds like there's reports coming out that he's going to be signing with the Saints, but we're not going to know for sure here. Probably by the time this airs, we'll know what he's decided on. But it kind of is looking like from reports that those are the two teams that have the most interest. Jonathan Taylor, as we know for the Colts, requested a trade. We talked about it last week. That's been a really messy situation. Not looking good, according to reports. Alvin Kamara is suspended, and we know this news broke recently as well. That's going to open the door for a guy like Hunt. What do you like for him, Alex? Do you think he's a better fit with the Saints or with the Colts?
Well, I think it obviously will be with the Saints, given I know they drafted a rookie in the third round, but given what the Saints are probably expecting their season to be, I would think the Saints would be a better fit for him in terms of getting the opportunity to start, because we know Jonathan Taylor is going to be the clear-cut starter. I know he's not in camp, and they're going through a little bit of back and forth, but I believe it'll get strained out because he is going into the last year of his contract. This isn't the time to sit out and hopefully someone treats you. You could be going anywhere, just play out the season. So I expect Jonathan Taylor to show up and be there. But it would in New Orleans, he would be the clear-cut starter with Alvin Kamara out. So it does give him hand in a sense that he can really show and prove some things, and maybe they trade him before the trading deadline again, or he sets himself up for another contract a lot quicker than it would be as him sitting out there for a while. So I think the Saints would be the better fit.
Yeah, and I think, like we talked about last week, I think this is a guy that's still got some gas left in the tank. I think he can still be a viable option for a team and have a really nice year this year. And I think the Saints makes a lot of sense. I think the Colts wouldn't be necessarily a bad option, especially if these reports about Taylor being unhappy. Who knows how far this goes? I'm with you. I don't think it's likely that he sits out, but there does seem to be some serious issues going back and forth between him, management, and owner Jim Irsay. Irsay has come out and said, look, we're not giving this guy a contract extension. He's been really firm on that, and he's in the last year of his deal, like you mentioned. So I think the Colts are a team that is really going to run the ball a lot. I think it could be a really good opportunity if he did get a chance there. If Taylor ends up sitting out or it opens a door for him. Or even in a backup role, I think there's still going to be enough touches to go around for him to have a big-time role with the Colts because, like we've talked about, with Shane Steichen taking over, I think this is going to be a run-heavy team with Anthony Richardson, the rookie quarterback, athletic rookie quarterback that can really run himself. I think we're going to see them run the ball a lot this year. So that could be a really good situation, whether it's starting or as a backup. So the biggest story, quite frankly, in all of football dropped last week. This is a story that we've been following because it all started with Colorado leaving the Pac-12, going to the Big 12, or I should say going back to the Big 12 after they left that conference back in 2011. But now the floodgates have opened. And this is something that I predicted, and it almost happened exactly like I said it would. Because now Oregon and Washington have left for the Big Ten. Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah joined Colorado in the Big 12. This is really, anybody that was paying attention knows that this was kind of the direction we were headed. And the Pac-12 has been so poorly run for so long, it just caught up to this conference. And eventually, it just became so unstable. They had a terrible media rights deal put in front of them, and they were going to be so far behind these other big conferences as far as revenue and exposure. It really forced the hands of these teams to look around and say, look, we've got to go find a better situation. I can't blame any of these teams. Now, I feel bad for the four remaining schools that are kind of left stranded here. Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, and Stanford are all kind of left looking around, wondering what's going to happen with them. But as far as these teams moving, man, this makes college football incredibly interesting. And this is all going to happen in 2024. So it's not going to be long, not this upcoming season, obviously, but the following season, college football is going to look drastically different. I think when you look at the Big 12, this conference got stronger, and it might just be the third best conference now. But the Big 10, with this move, they just became a full-blown super conference. It's really unprecedented what we've seen, them getting these four West Coast teams.
Yeah, and we spoke about this probably over the last two pods, and I specifically said, I said they need to stop the bleeding, else they're going to start to get cherry-picked, and this is what's happening when you get Arizona State and you have a lot of these other teams going to the Big Ten and then you have them going to the Big 12. They're now being cherry-picked, and the last standing team is Stanford. I thought it'd be Oregon and Stanford, but it's just Stanford. But with Washington, Oregon, all the teams, especially Oregon with Nike, they're now with them moving. That was a big piece to the puzzle. Now, when you go to try and negotiate any type of TV deal to stop the onslaught, it's a very, I'm not sure what they're using as their sledgehammer here, because to me now it's just Stanford. I know there's a couple of good teams, maybe a couple of mid-majors there, but it's a very low vibration that's happening now in the Pac-10. And I honestly don't know what it could do, or what they could do to stop this bleeding. I honestly don't know. I don't know where they go and where they can pull teams from into them that can make them any sort of powerhouse of what they were with the type of teams and the type of talent that they lost. This is just, I don't know. This is a huge shakeup in college football across the board. I mean, you would think in bringing in Deion and all the things they're going to have, they're going to have Caleb this year. It's going to look real good. But after this year, I don't know where the Pac-10 12s, I don't know what they are. I don't know what they become.
Yeah, you're right. Just getting cherry-picked left and right. Too many teams have left now. I think the four remaining schools, unfortunately, don't really have a whole lot of options. I think you look at Oregon State and Washington State, the remaining teams in the Northwest, I think they're going to be forced to probably have to join the Mountain West Conference or maybe some kind of merger here with the remaining Pac-12 schools in the Mountain West. And that's about the only move they have left. It doesn't seem like the Big 12 has any interest in further expansion at this point. And I think if they were going to take those teams, they would have with this move, getting the Arizona schools, Utah, and Colorado. I think if they wanted those other schools, they would have done it. But I saw a really great tweet, actually, Alex, and I thought it was just perfect because after all this movement, they posted a tweet that said, Oregon State and Washington State in the Mountain West. And it was just highlight videos of Kobe and Shaq in their heyday. I thought that was so creative because that's really what it's going to be. These two programs, they might have been lower on the totem pole in the Pac-12, but man, they're going to beat up on the Mountain West because these programs are really pretty solid right now. Oregon State is a dark horse to win the Pac-12 this year. They're that good. They're a top 25 program going into the preseason. You put them in a smaller conference like that, and they're going to be so tough. The move that really matters, though, I mean, let's face it. The Big 12, they made a nice move here. They've stabilized that conference, but they're sitting in a distant third because right now the Big 10 and SEC have completely separated themselves from everybody else in college football, especially with this move. They just added the four biggest brands out west, and they added the three best programs with the highest ceilings with USC, Oregon, and Washington. They own the LA market, the entire Northwest, including major cities of Portland and Seattle, of course. Just look at the top eight programs, Alex. Look at what it's going to look like in the Big Ten. Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, USC, Oregon, Wisconsin, Washington, and UCLA. You throw in some solid programs like a Michigan State and an Iowa. Boy, this conference is loaded. You're talking big brands, big stadiums, big fan bases, big money. They are now the biggest revenue-generating conference ahead of the SEC in the country. Now the Big Ten has something that no one else has. They're going to play in three time zones. And the SEC, as great as that conference is, it's regional. All their games are basically in two windows as far as TV time slots. The Big Ten is going to have great matchups all day Saturday, all the way from the early to late windows. These West Coast teams now are just going to open up so many doors for them to have so many different matchups late, like I said, late time West Coast. You're going to get big numbers and big viewership. I think the only mistake, and I don't know if it's necessarily a mistake, but I'm not sure I would have taken UCLA over Utah. Because I think nationally, a lot of people just don't realize how good Utah is. This team has won the Pac-12 back-to-back years. They're a much better football program right now than UCLA. But UCLA is the bigger brand. So I get it from that standpoint. And when you look at the Pac-12, look, I grew up out here. I'm on the West Coast. As you guys know, I always enjoyed Pac-12 football. I have for years. And it's kind of sad to see this conference implode. But like I talked about earlier, this conference was so poorly run for decades. I mean, you're talking multiple commissioners that ran this conference into the ground with bad deals and bad strategic moves. This is eventually what happens. I mean, if you eat Oreos every day for breakfast, eventually you get fat. This is what happens when you make bad decisions repeatedly. You can't just make bad business decisions over and over and expect to compete forever as a power conference. This is going to create more great matchups and bigger matchups more often on Saturdays. Sign me up, Alex. I can't wait. We are going to get so many big time games on Saturdays because of these moves.
Absolutely. And I think that's really what it's about. What's happening in the SEC, also what's happening with the Big Ten, those games and those in-season games are going to be flooded with people, flooded with talent, flooded with great football. And as you know, there's some movement on the other side in the ACC when you start talking about Florida State and perhaps Clemson. There could be some other changes coming, and obviously the SEC would be a destination, but there could be some other changes that we'll be seeing with, if not this year, but the end of next season, where we'll see some other things happen, where we may just be going to this Big Four conference, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, you're right. And that's something we've touched on briefly on the other episodes too, but I think it's worth noting because it's a good point, Alex. Clemson and Florida State and even schools like North Carolina and Miami, I think are teams that people need to circle and watch here because there's been a lot of rumors swirling about those programs. I don't think the ACC is very happy with their TV deal that they're trapped in right now. Their deal goes all the way through 2036. They're going to be making significantly less money than the rest of these conferences, and I don't think they're happy about it. And Florida State's been really verbal, especially lately, about wanting out of this conference, trying to raise the money to get out of this conference. I think the natural fit would be the SEC because of geographical reasons and the fact that the Big Ten just made this move. I could see the SEC responding with a move like that and grabbing a Florida State and a Clemson to kind of match what the Big Ten has done here. Not that they necessarily need to because they've got Texas and Oklahoma coming in, so they've gotten stronger as well. But it's just crazy. It's going to be so much fun. college football is changing so rapidly. Here's a side note here, Alex, that I really loved. I loved what Deion Sanders said recently. He was asked about all this realignment talk, and he said, quote, "Man, I don't care nothing about no different teams moving. We're trying to win, man. I don't care where we play. I don't care what conference, who we're playing against. We're trying to win. All this is about money. You know that. It's about a bag. Everybody's chasing the bag. Then you get mad at the players when they chase it."
Yeah, I mean, we know that these moves are strictly about money. And as you know, if we just talk about college sports as a whole, football is king in terms of the amount of money and revenue that they bring in. And of course, we can talk about perhaps like a school like Duke, which is primarily a basketball school. But a lot of these schools, football does drive the revenue in terms of the gate, in terms of the stadium, in terms of the TV deal and everything that goes along with it. And a lot of these sports programs across the board, when you get down to tennis, when you get down to lacrosse, volleyball, soccer, and so on and so forth, they also then reap the benefit of being with these teams moving to these bigger divisions with the better TV deals and more revenue coming in. There's a trickle-down effect to each school as well. So we understand, in terms of what Deion was talking about, the maturation of what this means for those schools, those programs, and financially, the trickle-down effect of what the revenue means for those schools and the programs within those schools.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there's been some buzz about some of these non-revenue-generating sports at these universities are not happy. And some of them are complaining about the travel and how they're going to have to travel from possibly Seattle or LA all the way to, you know, Rutgers or wherever, Maryland, and it's going to be hard on these teams. And I get that. But if it wasn't for football, there wouldn't even be these other sports. So, I mean, let's just face it. These colleges and these universities, they wouldn't even have a women's soccer team, a volleyball team, a baseball team. None of those teams would even exist if it wasn't for football. So I'm with you, Alex. I think it all trickles down from football. Football is paying the bills here, and it's just going to generate more revenue and better viewership for guys like you and me, and I'm all for it. All right, Alex, apparently there's 5 NFL teams that are most likely to disappoint in 2023. This is according to an article on Bleacher Report by Alex K. This came out just a little while ago. You brought it to my attention. I thought it'd be fun to talk about this on the podcast. Now, the 5 teams that are listed on here are the Baltimore Ravens, the Buffalo Bills, the Cleveland Browns, the New Orleans Saints, and the New York Jets. Alex, let's start here with what team or teams really jump out at you that you either agree with or disagree with? What stands out to you? What team are you kind of circling here?
Well, I mean, I've been on this, and you know this, Brett. I've been on this since the end of last season. This is not a new take for me, but the Buffalo Bills are number one with a bullet. I am squarely focused on them. I truly believe they will not make the playoffs this year, given how everybody else around them has improved. And again, yes, I am counting on Tua being healthy. But what everybody did around them and what they did not do, I think they were caught and they're going to easily be surpassed. We already saw what the Dolphins were able to do last year, even with a third-string quarterback, pushed them to the brink of elimination in the playoffs. We saw what the Jets did as they matriculated through the season. Their defense got better. They actually almost knocked Josh Allen out of the game, and they literally shut down Stephon Diggs. So we know what they are. And with the addition of Christian Gonzalez to the New England Patriots, along with, I'm actually prefacing what we're going to talk about in the AFC, so I'll stop there. But with what's happening there, I just believe that the Buffalo Bills will not make the playoffs. And I did just give a preview of what I'm going to talk about when we get to the AFC East preview. But they are number one on my list as a team that will not make that is due to disappoint this season, and I can clearly see it.
Buffalo is really one of those polarizing teams because we've talked about them a lot. This team has been really good in the Josh Allen era, so to speak. They've been a consistent playoff team, a team that's won this division 3 straight years. But we've talked about it. It seems like there's a little bit of a decline going on. I think we saw it last year, and it has to make you wonder if this is going to be a team going forward that's still in that true Super Bowl mix. Some of the things they point out here is the defense relying on older players. And I think it's a valid point because some of their best players on the defensive side of the ball have already played their best football, especially one in Von Miller. This is a guy who cannot stay healthy. He's not the same player that we saw in his prime. And yet, because of the lack of pass rush from that team, they need him to be special on that side of the ball. And I have serious doubts at this point in his career.
You know, another team, and I could see this happening because the New Orleans Saints as well, that's an interesting team to talk about. I can see them disappointing. There's a once they got Derek Carr, they've just been anointed the NFC South champs already with the way the rest of that division looks. But if we look at that division last year, it was very competitive down to maybe the last 4 weeks with what we saw from Atlanta and Tampa Bay and how lowly Tampa Bay played. They played down to a lot to the competition given the fact that their team just wasn't a really good team. But I think that it's really quick to anoint them given that they have Derek Carr and everything like that. There's a little talked about in terms of the coaching, and this is the one sport where coaching truly matters. So I can see the Saints. That's a good pick from the article. That's a good pick of a team that could underachieve.
This is a team, when we talked about the Super Bowl windows list that came out a few weeks ago on the pod, I brought up the Saints because I said they have no business being on this list. They're not in the Super Bowl bubble. They're not one of those teams. I don't think they're a team. I completely agree with them on this list because I have no idea why the expectations are this high for this team. And you hit on it perfectly. Dennis Allen is not the guy. I don't think he's ever been the guy. He's never shown me anything that makes me believe he's a legit head coach in the NFL. And Derek Carr, even though he's been a really solid quarterback for the majority of his career, we saw a decline last year, and that was with the best wide receiver in the game. He had one of his worst seasons. Now, like you said, coaching matters. I think Josh McDaniels is on a list with Dennis Allen of head coaches that are probably better suited to be coordinators. But with that being said, I think it's maybe fair to say Derek Carr's played his best football. If that's really what they're hanging their hat on here is Derek Carr and Dennis Allen, I'm not buying a lot of stock in the New Orleans Saints at all. I like some of these young teams in the NFC South, especially the Carolina Panthers. I know we'll get to that division preview here coming up at some point in a later episode, but I like the Panthers. I like what the Falcons have done. I'm not completely sold that the Saints are necessarily or should necessarily be the favorite in that division at all.
Now, they have the Jets on this list. I'm not sold on the Jets being a team that's going to disappoint. I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers has something to prove. He is a player that has a chip on his shoulder. So that's not a team I would have here. A team that I hear, there's two teams I'll name that I hear a lot of people clamoring about that they're going to make this jump. Maybe not necessarily a Super Bowl jump, maybe not even necessarily a playoff jump, but maybe this jump into being very, very competitive. One is the Chicago Bears, and the other one is the Detroit Lions. I keep hearing these two teams mention that they're going to take that Detroit Lions are ascending and they're going to take a leap. Hearing what Justin Fields has been surrounded with, what Ryan Poles has surrounded him with, there's a lot of clamoring saying they're going to make a jump to perhaps being a 500 team or a very, very competitive team, and then just talk about this jump now that Aaron Rodgers is gone from the division, and now that we look at the things that Minnesota is taking a step back on, that the Lions could be making a jump to run this division. Those are two teams that I think people are very high on that they're going to underachieve, specifically the Lions.
Yeah, I think the Lions are a team that could be on this list or maybe should be on this list because I'm with you, Alex. I know they finished the year really strong after a slow start. I know they've got something kind of going there and they've got a lot of nice young pieces, but I'm not necessarily buying the hype on the Lions either. And I'm not necessarily sure I'm even going to pick them to win that division. Now, I'll hold my take on who I think will win that division. We'll save that for another episode, but I agree with you. I think the Lions could be a solid team, but I'm not necessarily sold that they're a playoff team. And I think everyone from podcasters, media analysts, writers, it seems like everyone is penciling them in as the NFC North champs, and I'm not sure about it. So that's a team that I think could be on this list. I want to talk about the Jets for a second because you mentioned them. I think the Jets are built to have a really nice season, and I think they're getting a lot of hype for a reason because this is a really, really good roster on the defensive side of the ball, especially. And they've got some nice pieces on the offensive side of the ball as well. And now you've got Aaron Rodgers coming over, maybe, quite frankly, the best quarterback that's ever played for the New York Jets. Sorry, Joe Namath, but seriously, you're talking a four-time MVP, a first ballot Hall of Famer. He might not be in his prime, but if he plays at a decent level, if he plays at a top 10 level in this league, I think they have a legitimate shot to make some noise this year. The only reason I can see them being on this list is because it's starting to feel like Super Bowl or bust in New York. And if that's the bar for this team, then there is a pretty good chance that they're going to disappoint, because we know how hard it is to actually hoist that Lombardi. If they come up short in the playoffs, which I think is a realistic possibility, especially considering how loaded the AFC is, then I could see maybe that being the reason they would be a quote-unquote disappointment. But I have a hard time thinking this team is going to do anything less than 11 or 12 wins.
I will say this about the other team that they have on the list, the Baltimore Ravens. It's hard to say that about the Baltimore Ravens simply because, and we've talked about this before on and off mic, about the consistency of that franchise from its inception. If you go through their entire franchise since they've been the Baltimore Ravens, you are going to find, you'll be able to count on one hand how many times they've had less than 7 wins. That is a franchise that does not rebuild. They only reload. They only retool. So with what they did, bringing in OBJ, bringing in Zay Flowers, also hopefully having a healthy Rashad Bateman, a healthy J.K. Dobbins, they actually have the semblance of a no-fly zone with what they have in the defensive, with the back four defensively. This is a team I'm hard-pressed to say that simply because of what we've seen throughout history since they've been the Baltimore Ravens and since Ozzie Newsome has been at the helm, and now Eric DaCosta with Ozzie Newsome on as a consultant still. This is a team that I'm hard-pressed to see that them being on this list. They could disappoint. Perhaps they may not make the playoffs, but I don't expect them to have a bad season. The AFC North is a very, very, very tough division if you want to believe that Deshaun Watson will return to form. It's a very tough division. So if they were a team that didn't make the playoffs, I wouldn't necessarily call that a disappointment. I would just simply look at it as like, that's just par for the course, because that has historically been one of our harder divisions over recent years.
I agree with everything you just said there. I think the biggest question mark for the Ravens is this new look offense. Now, I like what you said about the weapons. He's going to have some nice pieces around him. He's going to have some people to throw to. But moving to this Todd Monken system, we know they're going away from what they've done with the heavy running quarterback offense and all the different RPO and quarterback designed runs that they had in the old system. They're going to be going to a more traditional spread it out, throw it around offense, and they're going to need Lamar Jackson to win consistently from the pocket. What is your take on that part of this? What do you expect from Lamar Jackson in this new offense? I know we haven't seen anything yet, and we're just kind of projecting what we think here in the offseason, but what are your initial thoughts about Lamar Jackson's ability to have success in this style of offense? Because it's going to be a big change from what we've seen in Baltimore.
Well, this is what he's been asking for. They are giving him the keys to the castle. They are fully giving him the keys to the castle. He's going to have a lot more freedom. We understand that Todd Monken has taken the armband off of him. I'm not kind of sure what that does for him. I mean, even Tom Brady wore an armband, so I'm not sure how that may help. I'm a little bit perturbed by that, but nonetheless, it's something that they're doing to give, that he says is going to give him further full command of the offense. And now he's in his sixth year. You should be ascending now. You should have seen a few things. You should be able to dissect defenses when you get to the line and know what to audible into and out of, versus perhaps just being stringent in terms of maybe the way Greg Roman ran the offense and how he had to run it, versus now giving a little bit more freedom. And Zay Flowers, ladies and gentlemen, Zay Flowers, you're going to be introduced to this young man this season. And here's a tidbit for fantasy owners. This is a guy that you may want to overdraft. And I say overdraft in terms of draft him a little bit early, because if anything's been going like how OBJ's career has been going, he's going to get a lot more targets and be a lot more integral in this offense than before. And he will be an easy, easy steal. But I love Zay Flowers. I love that pick. But Lamar, he has to. This is all on him. And this is what he's been asking for. Now all eyes are on him, and we're going to be able to see how he handles the pressure.
Yeah, we know Lamar Jackson is probably underrated as a passer. And I think that's because he's such a dynamic runner that sometimes we undervalue his ability to make throws down the field. But with that being said, his threat as a runner does open things up for him, and it always has in that old offense. If he's not as much of a threat to run the ball, and defenses are going to change the way they address this team, it's going to be a fascinating team. This is a team to circle. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think the stability of the franchise, like you touched on, the stability at the head coaching position, of course, makes me believe they're still going to be pretty good. But like you said, it's a tough division and it's a tough conference with a new offense. Really a fascinating team. I'm going to be watching them closely. The last team here, speaking of the AFC North, is the Cleveland Browns. This is a polarizing team too here because Deshaun Watson coming back from the suspension, the long break from football here, comes back at the end of last year and really played some terrible football. I mean, let's face it. I don't know if it was just rust, the new system, the combination of all those things, maybe the pressure. I'm not sure exactly all the different factors that went into why he played so poorly. But does he have a bounce back year, Alex? Does he return to the guy that we saw in Houston when he was playing at a Pro Bowl level?
You know, I heard an interesting stat, and I'm upset that I didn't write it down. The stat was he only had about 7 to 8 wins over playoff caliber teams throughout his career. So a lot of what we've been seeing from Deshaun Watson perhaps could be smoking mirrors, because when there is a great team that he has to face, when there is a playoff caliber team he has to face, he's not rising to the level. Or perhaps it could be the team, let's just be fair, in terms of what Houston was and how it became in that last year, his last year playing, even though he had a stellar year and had the most passing yard. I believe he led the league in passing that year, but the team was 4-12. So looking at that, there's going to be expectation now, specifically being in this division that we spoke about before, the AFC North, everybody's tough. We all know what the Bengals are. We know the Steelers and the Ravens are consummate teams that will be tough to beat. They come prepared every single week. So every single week, he's going to face a challenge. So now this is going to be his opportunity. He's also been, for the first time in his career, surrounded by Nick Chubb, as well as Donovan Peoples-Jones. And he has a really good offensive line. I don't want to say great. I want to say very good. And a formidable defense, something that he similarly had in Houston as well. So this is really going to be on him to show and prove that he can perform against the caliber of teams that he's going to be facing each week, specifically in that division.
Yeah, and I think the jury's still out on Kevin Stefanski, because I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm not trying to say that, but I don't know if I've seen enough from this guy yet. I think there's some pressure starting to build on him this year to really show something with this team, because they do have a talented roster and they've got so much money tied up in Deshaun Watson. They're going to expect results this year in Cleveland. So this is a team that maybe could disappoint from that standpoint. And when you look at Stefanski, like I said, maybe he's not a terrible coach, but I think it's safe to say he's the worst coach in this division. And that certainly doesn't help things either. Amari Cooper is a guy who I think has already played his best football. Elijah Moore, I think, is quite frankly an overrated wide receiver. I'm not sure he has great weapons on the outside in Cleveland. Now, I think Nick Chubb is going to be pivotal. He's going to have to be a monster this year, and they're going to have to bring balance to help out this offense. But this is another fascinating team, Alex. Hey, PGF Nation, are you tired of the same old bland food at your tailgate parties? Well, let me tell you about my friends at The Tailgate Foodie, the seasoning and barbecue sauce company that specializes in elevating your tailgate and backyard cooking game. With their unique blend of spices and sauces, The Tailgate Foodie will take your taste buds on a flavor journey that you won't forget. Use code PINTGLASSFOODIE for 15% off your first order at thetailgatefoodie.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. Our top 3 most underrated NFL players going into 2023. We haven't discussed who the guys are. I'm excited to hear who's on your list. Alex, why don't you kick this off?
Well, Brad, this is actually a gentleman that we recently spoke about. It was recent, maybe about 45 minutes ago. Mike Evans. I think he's severely underrated. I think that the only time he's ever been talked about is when Tom Brady was there, and that's probably more because Tom Brady was there. But this guy, every single year, shows up to work, has given 1,000 or more yards every single year, and 5 times, over double digit in touchdowns. And he's the only wide receiver in NFL history to open up his career with 7 straight 1,000-yard seasons. I believe he's severely overlooked. And again, we only talked about him because we got to see him on the big stage, almost similar to my next player that I'll talk about further down the line. But I think Mike Evans is probably one of the biggest, most underrated players in this league.
When we did our wide receiver rankings, this is a guy that we had on our list in the top 8. And I think some people might have wanted to push back on that. And the main reason people push back is because exactly what you're saying. He's underrated. And he has been for a while now. You just hit on it. The guy's just been a consistent, key producing wide receiver who's put up solid numbers year in and year out, every year in the league. And outside of the Brady years, he had some really subpar quarterbacks that he played with, and he was still able to put up big numbers. Certainly a guy that does not get enough attention for what he's done. We were having the Hall of Fame consideration talk off air when we were talking about Mike Evans, and I think it's an interesting debate. Now, he's obviously still got some football left to play, but I think he's going to be in the conversation, certainly, and a guy that just quite frankly doesn't get enough props. So I like that pick. My first guy that I'm going to put on my underrated list here, Tyson Campbell, the cornerback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a guy who really emerged last year in that Jacksonville secondary. He played over 1,200 defensive snaps, and he really showcased the durability and the skills to be a shutdown cornerback in this league. 3 interceptions, 15 passes defended, just has that ability to make those game-changing plays. Most fans don't realize just how good this guy is. Now, part of that might be that he's in Jacksonville. He's a younger player. I get it. But offensive coordinators around the league, trust me, they are aware of how good this guy is because they often just avoid throwing to his side. He's that good of a player already. He's going into his second season under defensive coordinator Mike Caldwell. So I think Campbell's growth and familiarity in this system in year two is going to have an even bigger impact in 23.
I'm going to stick with the wide receiver. And again, another player that we recently talked about in Terry McLaurin. I feel I'm cramped to understand why this gentleman is consistently overlooked. He was part of that four pack of Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown that all came out in the same draft. They all got paid last season as well. And he's consistently overlooked out of those four people. Obviously, DK size and some of the primetime games he's been able to get playing alongside Russell Wilson. We know with AJ Brown, how he was able to ascend and finally have his moment in the sun. And Deebo's been on the 49ers and they've always been on primetime if they've been playing the championship games. But Terry McLaurin is sitting over there in Washington and no one is paying attention about what he's been doing since he's entered the league. Probably out of those four with the worst set of quarterbacks, with Alex Smith coming back from that horrific injury, he's had Dwayne Haskins, RIP, and he's had Taylor Heineke. He's also had a few other nondescript quarterbacks, but consistently putting up 1,000 yards, consistently doing the things that you want that we just spoke about with Mike Evans, but he's consistently overlooked and he's never talked about in terms of some of the top wide receivers or even just in general, simply because of where he plays. So here's to Washington, and I know the dreaded word tanking or whatever, maybe they get Caleb Williams, maybe they get Drake May, or maybe there is some other quarterback that can come there and he can finally get his day and his time to shine in the light.
He's not underrated in my book, Alex, that is for sure, but I think nationally he is, because he doesn't get talked about in the same breath as those guys that you mentioned. And I think you hit it perfectly. Part of it is just the fact that he's in Washington. I'm sorry, Commanders fans. That's just the truth. This is a team that hasn't had a lot of success in recent years. And because of that, they don't get as much attention as some of these other teams. And the fact that they just haven't had a legit franchise quarterback. It's just been a revolving door of guys, most of them being well below average, which makes it even more impressive. And I'll tell you what else he's been doing in Washington, getting double teamed. This is a guy who sees bracket coverage almost as much as anybody in the league, because there's no one else that the defense has to worry about. So he's getting the top cornerback and usually a safety over the top with a bad quarterback throwing to him, and he's still putting up these kind of numbers. You're damn right he's underrated, Alex. There's no doubt about it. This guy, the one publication that I think is giving him the props he deserves is PFF. Because I saw that Pro Football Focus recently put out their list of the top wide receivers. I think they had him at number 8. And I loved that they put respect on this guy, because a lot of publications and a lot of analysts and so forth tend to overlook this guy. Certainly a lot of fans do as well. Really, really good player. I love Scary Terry. That's a great pick. How about Chigozie Okonkwo? If you don't know the name, you're going to know the name by the end of this season. He's the tight end for the Tennessee Titans. Now, with the departure of Robert Woods, the Tennessee Titans are going to be looking for new playmakers in the passing game. And we saw some flashes of real talent from this guy. And no lie, for all you guys that have followed the podcast closely, if you go back and listen, this is a ways back. You might have to dig through the archives here. But when he came out of Maryland, I really, really liked this kid coming out of the draft. I thought he had big, big time upside, and we started to see it. He quietly showcased those abilities last season, pulling in 32 passes for 450 yards and 3 touchdowns. And this was as a rookie. Now, he steadily increased his playing time, saw more and more playing time as the season went on, was getting over 4 targets a game in the last 7 games of the season. So we could see the Titans starting to realize that they might have something with this guy. He's going to be a guy to watch this season. When you look at this Titans offense, there's not a lot of weapons. There's not a lot of playmakers. I think he's a guy that's poised to become the top target in this offense. So like Alex likes to say, fantasy alert here, fantasy alert. This is a sleeper tight end that I think you should be looking out for as well, because I think he could have a breakout year and become more of a household name and not so underrated in 23.
Though I cannot pronounce his name as eloquently as you did, this is a guy that's been on my radar, not because of the play, but specifically what Brad just ended with, fantasy. He's a person that I have circled that I can probably get in the later round, so he's absolutely correct there. Now, in talking about the game planning for it, We know last year they had Julio Jones. This year they have a younger, more productive DeAndre Hopkins in the offense as well. And Derrick Henry coming back again. Hopefully he's still at full strength. And this is the last year for Ryan Tannehill. This is the last year for the head coach as well. This is the last year for Derrick Henry. So everybody, this is going to be a very, very interesting team to watch. And specifically will be the tight end position, because with those weapons around him, he stands to be the beneficiary of a lot of intermediate throws that he can take to the house. I love his speed. I love his size. And he is definitely a sleeper and an underappreciated player that no one is talking about. So for my last one, I'm going to go obviously in a different direction. I gave you two wide receivers. I'm going to give you a defensive player, and a defensive player from a team that I have been talking about not going anywhere, but this player is absolutely going somewhere. It's Matt Milano. When we talk about the Buffalo Bills, there's Stephon Diggs, there's Tre'Davious White, there's obviously Josh Allen, there's Ed Oliver, and there was a guy named Tremaine Edmonds who was their middle linebacker that departed this year for Chicago. And enter Matt Milano. Very underrated. A lot of people do not talk about him. Out of Boston College, last year he had 5 sacks, 24 quarterback pressures, 89 solo tackles. He allowed 59 catches on 81 targets for 500 yards and only 389 yards after catch. No touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 6 pass breakups, an opponent passer rating of 73.1. He actually does every single thing on the field, and he's now going to be moving to middle linebacker, so that's more like he's going to be wearing the green dot, depending if they want to take it from Mike Hyde and give it to him. He's going to be wearing the green dot. He's going to be have more control of defense, and I look for him to have another breakout year again with a lot more tackles and a lot more plays, being that he's going to be playing middle linebacker. But it's a player that no one is talking about on Buffalo Bills. Everybody's talking about when Von Miller comes back. I spoke about Greg Rousseau as a guy that's going to be taking a leap this year as well. But this is a guy on this team that no one is talking about, and he could be the most pivotal person on the defense, Matt Milano.
You are exactly right, Alex, because this is the defense that desperately needs big-time playmaking, big-time tackling, and he brings it. I love everything you said there, because this is a guy that can tackle and finish with the best of them. Really, really underrated player. Unless you're in Bills Mafia, you probably haven't even heard of him or know very little about him, but just a really solid all-around defender. I love that pick. Now, I'm going to use another Alexism right here for you guys. This is the most underrated player in the NFL, number one with a bullet. Frankie Louvu, linebacker, Carolina Panthers. This guy is awesome. And if you haven't paid attention to this guy yet, you need to circle this name, because he had a stellar 2022 season, but he flew under the radar somehow, and I don't know how, he missed out on All-Pro and Pro Bowl selections. I thought he should have been both. Last year, he started 14 games, really impressive numbers, 111 tackles, 19 tackles for a loss, 7 sacks, and a pick 6. Tell me those aren't Pro Bowl or All-Pro numbers. I'll wait, because they are. This guy is so good, man. He is so fun to watch. He's versatile. He's an explosive playmaker for that defense. Now, they're going to be switching to a 3-4 base defense from a 4-3, but with this guy's versatility, I don't think it's going to be an issue at all. I actually think it's going to benefit him because of his skill set and his ability to chase and get in the backfield. I think he has potential to wreak havoc on the backfield next year. People need to pay attention to Frankie Louvu.
Yeah, on a team that, 3 years ago went completely defense in terms of drafting. All 7 picks were all defensive draft picks. This team has been ascending as a defensive team as they hit on a lot of those draft picks, and Frankie Louvu is just adding to what they have already started on this team. You're absolutely right. Flew completely under the radar. People are talking about Brian Burns. They're talking about Derrick Brown. They're talking about the safety in terms of Jeremy Chinn and obviously what J.C. Horn has been able to do. But he has just been overlooked, and I think it's because they have a great unit. But you know what? Sometimes it's good to fly under the radar, because then they stop paying attention to you. And then what you get the opportunity to do is make them pay attention to you. And that's what Frankie Louvu did last year.
All right, Alex, let's keep the division previews going here, getting closer to the regular season. This one's going to be fun. AFC East, a lot of really intriguing teams here. Let's start with your favorite team, the Buffalo Bills.
Yes, and I gave a preview of them when we were going through teams that could underachieve. The Buffalo Bills will definitely underachieve this year. I am very low. I am sell on Buffalo this season. They had a two-year window. They had the opportunity to take the division over and kind of perhaps maybe go on a New England-style run with what they started with Josh Allen, with him ascending with Stephon Diggs. But they could not close the gap. They closed the gap on defense. They closed the gap on offense in terms of the air attack. But they could not close the gap on the running game these past two seasons. And they did not once again this year. They're going into, and I'm done. This does not mean that they're going to be a crappy team. We're just talking about this season. They will not make the playoffs. Yes, they have all the names. Yes, I know that everybody's been promoting Josh Allen to be this guy that they want to take over and just simply ignoring that Joe Burrow exists in the atmosphere, which is very weird. But this is no longer the year for Buffalo. The other teams, and I'll get into those later on why, but the other teams have taken dramatic steps to get closer to this team, and they have not done enough. Yes, I did give their draft. I believe I gave their draft a B+. We know what they did. They have with Dalton Kincaid that finally gives them, I don't want to call it a number two receiver, but we'll just call it a number two option in the passing game. We know he's a stretch tight end, as I like to call them, similar to the stretch four in the NBA, because he's multiple and you can put him a couple of different places and he can be a weapon on the field. Perhaps that helps out with Josh Allen and seeing the field and maybe getting the ball out of his hands a little bit quicker, but it's not enough because they still have not fixed the running game and gone and got a guy. We knew that Kareem Hunt was out there. We knew that Dalvin Cook was out there, but they still haven't gone and gotten a guy that can really be a bell cow, or furthermore, just be somebody that can get short yardage when you need to get short yardage. And they found themselves in that position several times last year, and they could not close the deal. And now Miami is caught up, New England is caught up, and the Jets have caught up. And as I said, I'll get into those later, but Buffalo, they will not be making the playoffs this year. That doesn't mean they're going to just fall off a cliff. I look at them perhaps maybe having between 6 to 8 wins, but they will not make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I think you were the first person in the sports media to start going against the Bills because, man, they've been this team that everyone has been just on this Bills train for the last couple of years. It's weird how all of a sudden now people are starting to kind of get on to your take here with Buffalo. But I swear you were the first person to say it, Alex. You've been saying it all offseason, and you've made a lot of valid points about this team. The last three regular seasons, they've led the league in points per game and points allowed per game. They won the division the last 3 years. So we've seen the success on the field. It hasn't translated in the playoffs, but we've seen how good this team can be. And I get why there's a lot of hype around them as far as being in the Super Bowl mix, having a quarterback that's been in the MVP mix. But Josh Allen took a step back last year, and we've talked about it briefly, but this is a guy who led the league in turnovers last year. He was their second leading rusher with 124 carries. I'm sorry, that's not something I want my franchise quarterback doing. Now, I know he's a big athletic kid, and you want to be able to utilize his legs, but I don't want my quarterback running 124 times. Actually, Allen was quoted saying, "It's like I can't continue to do this. I know when I'm using my youth, I feel like I can, but over the course of my career, I'm going to have to learn to adapt and change." I agree with, because I think he realizes, like, look, this can't continue. Not if you're going to be a long-term franchise quarterback for the next 8 to 10 years in Buffalo. They have got to change the philosophy, and it starts by running the ball more without Josh Allen being one of your leading rushers. And that's something that they just haven't addressed. Like you said, Alex, my big question is, can the Bills find that consistent running game outside of Josh Allen? I'm not sure they can, because they haven't addressed it with the position. I'm not sure they have a guy in the building that can really be that bell cow guy, the between the tackles physical running game that they need to bring balance back to this offense. Now, you talked about it. I like what they did in the draft from getting a guy like Dalton Kincaid. I loved your analogy there as a stretch four. That's a great, great call there. I love this kid coming out of Utah. He was my number one ranked tight end. He's the best pass catching tight end, the best flex tight end in this class. He's going to be a weapon in this passing game day one. And I do like that they beefed up the interior of that offensive line, drafting guard Osiris Torrance from Florida. I think he's a very solid prospect. Buffalo added 4 guards actually to this roster from a season ago. I think it's obvious that they're trying to look to become more balanced. I think they are going to try to run the ball more between the tackles. Ken Dorsey, the offensive coordinator now, is going into year two. I think he's under some pressure here, Alex, to take some of that off of Josh Allen's plate this year. Now, this team added Taylor Rapp. He's a nice upgrade to that defensive backfield. And they added Puna Ford to the defensive interior. He's a good run defender. But like we talked about with this team, the Bills' first-place schedule in that improved AFC East is going to make it a challenge. We've talked about the conference. We know how loaded it is. Alex, let's wrap it with this. I know you're not high on this team. I think we all know that. Tongue-in-cheek when I said it's your favorite team, obviously. Where do they finish in this division?
I have them. They could. You know what? This division to me is going to be so tough that I could look at them perhaps coming in third, but not having less than 7 wins, simply because I think this division has truly, truly, truly evened out a lot. And it's going to be very competitive that I think may probably only one team makes it out of this division. I'll reveal that later on. But only one team makes it out of this division. I just don't believe it's going to be them. Like I said, they're not going to fall off a cliff. They're just going to have a down year. And they're going to have to do some retooling there. And then they'll perhaps maybe jump back up and be a little bit more competitive. But the way that this is shaking out, I can't see them getting more than 7 wins. So that'll put them anywhere between second and fourth, because I think a lot of this division is going to be tied at either 7 to 8 wins of teams that just don't make the playoffs.
I was waiting for you to say fourth, Alex. I'm not going to lie. I was waiting for you to put them in the cellar here. I might not be as low on them as you are, but I am with you. I think they finish maybe second or third. I think on the high side, second, on the low side, third, and if things really don't bounce their way, maybe they do finish at the bottom, but I think they're in the mix for the second or third place team here. Let's talk about the Miami Dolphins here, Alex. This is a fascinating team. When Tua was healthy, the Dolphins had an offense capable of winning this division. I think we saw that. Mike McDaniel showed why he's viewed as one of the bright young offensive minds in the game last year. This team has playmakers on the outside. If Tua can stay healthy, they should be dangerous again. But that's a big if. Bringing in quarterback Mike White, I think, was a really nice insurance plan.
Yeah, Miami is a team here that seems to have everybody's number. We know that they play New England tough all the time, and we saw what they did with the Bills last year, even going into the playoffs and playing them down to the wire with the third-string quarterback. So again, another team that's taken a few huge steps forward, and I will keep going back to this person. We already know, and Brad just spoke about Tua. We don't need to speak about on that anymore. This is not about his ability. This is more about his availability. So we'll just take that and put that to the side. We understand that Jalen Ramsey is hurt, but the guy that I'm going to talk about, his name is Vic Fangio. What this guy has done is one of the best defensive minds in the last 20 years, and what he's able to do with defenses, he is going to enhance this team even more. And in those tough games, those shootout games that Miami used to get in, he's going to be able to limit those, or he's going to be able to create some turnovers where it would end up being a back and forth. He's going to be able to create some turnovers. He's going to get some stops that they did not get last year that's going to push them forward this year. This is the team that I have perhaps winning the division, but I have a lot of reservation simply because we just don't know about Tua. So I cannot lock it in. But if Tua is healthy, this is the one team that I could see winning the division and perhaps making the playoffs. But it's going to be very tough for me to lock that in. I'm not sold on it, but I know what happens if we just simply run a season and everybody's healthy. We know how that looks for most teams. But since this is the NFL and when this is real life, it's very hard to lock it in. And I so strongly want to lock them in, but I can't. So you're just going to have to wait a few more moments before I tell you the team that I have locked in. But this is, again, another team that's going to be very competitive. Now, I will push back a little bit on Mike White. I felt that there were other quarterbacks that they could have gone out there and gotten that I would have felt a little bit more comfortable with. However, depending on how you feel about Mike McDaniel coming from that Shanahan tree, and we know how they are with quarterbacks and always putting them in the best position to do the things that they do best, and give a little credence to that, given again, like I said, what we saw last year with the third string quarterback against in a playoff game in Buffalo and what they were able to do, pushing Buffalo to the brink of elimination. But Miami is a team, and if I just go with what I feel, I could see Miami just with 8 wins again. And this is simply because of the injury factor that we could possibly see with Tua. We hope he doesn't get hurt, and that's the reason I can't lock it in. So I'm going to give them between 8 and 9 wins this season.
Yeah, huge wild card for Tua. Huge wild card. You're right. I like what you said there. We've seen the ability. It's the availability. It's a great point. This is a guy that was contemplating retirement. That tells me that he might just be one big hit away from hanging it up. And as far as a franchise is trying to build something, I don't know how excited I am about that part of it. Now, obviously, like you said, we're really hoping, I think everyone is hoping, that he stays healthy and we can see him play at a high level this year. And I think if he does, Miami could be really dangerous, because I love that side of the ball, like we talked about with Mike McDaniel, this offense, the weapons. I think it's all in place here. But to jump to the defensive side of the ball, you're right. We're both really excited about Vic Fangio coming over to this side, because now you're going to have a great offensive mind on one side, a great defensive mind on the other side, and there's some playmakers. Now, Jalen Ramsey was a big addition to this team. Him getting hurt, I think, does impact this team, and it's going to be hard to say what kind of impact he actually has on this team when he returns, when he returns. That's kind of a big question mark there. Really unfortunate, but I really like their rookies, especially cornerback Cam Smith and running back Devon Achane. These are guys that I think could make an impact and be difference makers year one. And with that injury, Cam Smith might be seeing a lot more playing time than we might have expected going into the year. But Vic Fangio also has some young stars on this defense: Christian Wilkins, Jalen Phillips, and Javon Holland, which, side note here, when we just did our underrated players, there's an honorable mention for you right there. Javon Holland might be one of the most underrated safeties in the game today. This guy is a heck of a player. Now, another big question mark: if Bradley Chubb can get back to looking like the guy that we saw his rookie year, this unit could be special. We know that Fangio is going to be really the key to this Dolphins season. He's the highest paid defensive coordinator in the NFL for a reason. And he's an innovative defensive mind and a great play caller. I'm really excited to see what he can do with these chess pieces. Now, last year, they had 3 straight wins, 3 straight losses, 5 straight wins, 5 straight losses. They have to find a way to be more consistent this season. And obviously, we know that starts with the quarterback position. Really fascinating team in Miami, but they've got a high ceiling. All right, let's talk about the most talked about team in the NFL this offseason, the team that's going to be featured on Hard Knocks. Can't wait to watch it. The New York Jets. This Jets team could win their first AFC East title since 2002. And the formula is pretty simple: 4-time MVP Aaron Rodgers and a top 5 defense in the NFL.
Right. And again, another big piece to why I keep saying that the Buffalo Bills are just moving down the ranks as we talk about the additions of all these, of what these other teams are doing. Aaron Rodgers probably being the biggest addition in the division overall, given his resume. We can talk about the falling short in Green Bay, but however, you mentioned it before, Brad, this is probably the greatest quarterback that the Jets have ever had in the building. So, honorable mention to however you want to put it, to Joe Namath and even Brett Favre for the season that he was there. But Aaron Rodgers, who, from what I'm hearing, and I heard Peter King talk about this from Sports Illustrated today, that he's heard that Aaron, depending on how everything goes, may want to play even beyond the 2 years that are left on his contract. So we could be looking at maybe, let's at least cap it at 3 years, a 3-year window of this team. And with the willingness of that Aaron Rodgers has shown to give money back, he just gave back $35 million. So he's showing that he wants to win. He's ingratiating himself to the city and to the team. He has this bromance going along now with Sauce Gardner. A lot of you may have seen Sauce kind of give him a nice diamond pendant and things like that. So things seem to be going well in a Jet World, Florham Park right now, and hopefully it continues. And again, when we start talking about this defense and what they've been putting together, if this defense can replicate anything like what they did last year and doing what we saw what they did to the Buffalo Bills, this is a team that again, I still don't have a lock, but this is the team that I could see vying, as you said, Brad, to be the champs of the AFC East. But there's always that looming person up there, up the road, up Boston Road, that's always going to loom large over this entire division. But the Jets are in prime position to, if what we feel about and how we feel about Tua and what the Miami Dolphins are doing, but with this young Jets team, with a veteran leader, and how they're going to be pumped up on Sundays to play, and what they bring to the table. The only reserve I have about the Jets, and the only huge hole that I see with the Jets, is we still don't know about Breece Hall. And he was on his way to probably being rookie of the day. The Jets, either way, whether it was Garrett Wilson or Breece, they looked like they were on their way to still having the defensive rookie of the year and the offensive rookie of the year on that team had he not gotten hurt. I haven't heard much. I know he's been reserved in camp. They're not using him a lot, so they're holding on. But then the other part of that is the offensive tackles for this team. 38-year-old Dwayne Brown and oft-injured Mekhi Becton, who took himself out of the game. He was expected to play 20 to 25 snaps, but he took himself out of the game after 7 snaps. Now, we know the interior of that line looks a little bit better with Elijah Vera Tucker and company, but those two tackles, and even though Aaron Rodgers is a veteran quarterback, he can clean up a lot of that with quick throws and line switches and things as such, but that is going to be a problem in this division, where you're going to have Vic Fangio in that pass rush, where you're going to have, regardless of how I feel about the Bills, Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, and company, that pass rush, and we know what New England brings as a pass rush. Those two tackles are going to be pivotal for the Jets to have any true success going to try and win this division, and if they make the playoffs, to going further in the playoffs. So those are the questions that I have and why I can't have them as a lock. But things are looking very up for those in Florham Park. Anybody who's a Jet fan, things are looking up for what's going on in Jetland.
You talked about offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year. This team, like we talked about, just so much young talent. Sauce Gardner, defensive rookie of the year last year. They've got all-pro Quinnen Williams, who they just locked into a big contract. These guys were key players on a team that allowed the fourth fewest points per game in the league last year. This is a legit defense. Now, losing defensive tackle Nathan Shepard and defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins, I think, does hurt this team up front, especially versus the run. Now, we know Quinnen Williams is one of the best in the business, but those are some big losses up front. I think that's something to watch. If there is a weakness in this defense, that's where it's going to be. Now, Joe Douglas has done an incredible job. He has hit on a lot of draft picks these past few years. I think he did it again with this class. I love these rookies. Defensive end Will McDonald. You know how much I like this guy, Alex. We talked a lot about him leading up to the draft. I think he's got big-time talent. And everything that I've seen, the reports from a lot of the beat writers in New York are saying that he has been a beast at training camp. We talked about him briefly at the Hall of Fame game. He flashed some talent in that game, too. I know it's preseason. I know it's training camp. I'm not trying to overreact here. But the early results here are showing that this kid might have something. Now, center Joe Tippmann was a massive need on this roster because they desperately needed to plug that hole up front at the center position. I loved him coming out of the draft. Running back Israel Abanikanda is another guy that we talked about when we talked about this draft class for the Jets. Really, really high-level player out of Pitt. Really good running back, and a guy that also looked really good in that Hall of Fame game. So I think we talked about Breece Hall here, but I think they've got some depth here at the running back position because I think Abanikanda can actually be a difference maker and a rotational guy for them. Now, adding Alan Lazard, I think, was a really solid move, not only because of Rodgers and his trust in Lazard, but Lazard is maybe the best blocking wide receiver in the NFL. And we know this is a Jets team that wants to run the ball, so I like that move. It's kind of a sneaky good move that a lot of people aren't talking about. Now, the Jets, they fired Mike LaFleur and replaced him with Nathaniel Hackett, which might have some people scratching their head based on what we saw in Denver last season. I get it. But Rodgers won back-to-back MVPs with Hackett as his offensive coordinator. So there's a reason that Aaron Rodgers wanted this guy so bad. And I think it is going to be a good fit with him as the OC and Rodgers and that chemistry and the familiarity with the play calling and this offense. You hit on it, though, Alex, and I want to emphasize it. I think the biggest red flags for New York is the offensive tackles and the depth at defensive tackle, because outside of Williams, they're pretty thin up front. Big question marks along the lines, and we know how important those are. But with all that being said, I'm going to lock them in as my pick. I think they win this division, Alex. I'm buying into the hype. Now, I think they are a team that might disappoint come playoff time, because that's, quite frankly, that's what Aaron Rodgers does. He tends to disappoint in the playoffs. But I do think this is a team that wins 12 or 13 games, has an awesome season, and gets the Jets at the top of this division again for the first time in a long time. All right, let's jump to the last team here, the New England Patriots. The biggest change for this team is at the offensive coordinator position, hiring Bill O'Brien from Alabama, maybe the most notable coaching hire this offseason, and being able to reunite him with Mac Jones. I don't think this can be understated. This is a big move for this team. The offensive play calling was awful last year under Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. O'Brien is going to be a big upgrade for this offense.
Absolutely. And that's the number one place I was going to go. I mean, this team was still 8-9 with Joe Judge and the defensive coordinator running the offense. They were still 8-9. That just shows you how good the coaching is amongst the dysfunction that was going on for play calling, as well as a lack of weapons that they had on the outside as well. Now you bring in Bill O'Brien, who's kind of knows the Alabama system, that knows some things that Mac Jones does well. And also enter Juju Smith-Schuster, an intermediate route runner that's going to take advantage of a lot of what Mac Jones does as well. Intermediate route throwing, excellent completion percentage. Although what we saw with him at Alabama, when you get into the AFC East, those swirling winds, those winter months, this is not, he does not have the strongest arm to be out there doing what we saw in Alabama. So you get to shorten the routes. They also brought in Mike Gesicki, very underrated, very under the radar signing that not a lot of people are talking about because of how explosive the Miami Dolphins last year were with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. He was off the forgotten man in that offense, and they rarely used him. And this offense, standing next to Hunter Henry, they are going to use Mike Gesicki. You're going to see an ascension of Mike Gesicki to what we thought he was 2 years ago before they had the explosion at with Tyreek Hill, and it opened up the offense a lot more. We know what their running game. We know what their running game is and everything. And also, I want to talk about Tyquan Thornton. He's typically just a nine-route guy. He did not run the route tree well at Baylor. He did not run the route tree well if you watched him during the combine. But going up the seam, if you're telling me that you're going to have to watch out for Juju in the middle, you're also going to have to watch out for both tight ends, that's going to leave him open on one-on-one coverage. And this is a guy with his size and with his speed that you do not want to be caught on your heels as he's flying by you with that, I believe it was 4.29 speed. Another under-the-radar draft pick they also had was Kayshawn Boutte out of LSU in the sixth round. This is another guy to watch out for that they can sneak on the field. You know Bill Belichick does his homework, so don't be surprised if you start to see this guy come on towards the mid to the end of the season. They start putting him in packages out there in the field. And, of course, they always have a solid offensive line. They know what they're doing offensively. Defensively, again, we also know what they're doing. But I still don't know, and I do not know why the NFL, and I'm blaming the NFL on this, wink, wink, why they let him get Christian Gonzalez. He already has Jack Jones that he developed. He already has Jonathan Jones that he developed. Now you give him Christian Gonzalez along with Kyle Duggan and Adrian Phillips at the safety positions as well. You have now given this team now has a no fly zone. And with you have, when you have that, you add in Matthew Judon, you add in Keon White, the other rookie from Notre Dame that they signed, who's multiple up and down that line. They are going to wreak havoc on the AFC East, and this is my one lock for the winning that division. I think Bill Belichick is going to bounce back. I think he has his offensive coordinator that he trusts in position. You've given him now Christian Gonzalez, where he is going to create a no-fly zone back there that's going to allow him to apply a lot more pressure, do a lot more blitzing, and be a lot more multiple with his blitz packages and what he does up front. And we know they always, one thing that the Patriots always have is a running game. They may not have a guy, even though Ramondre Stevenson is looking like a guy, but they always have a running game. And even if Mac Jones isn't doing as well, Bailey Zappe came in and showed that he can do something. So they even have a backup if something were to happen to Mac Jones. This is a team that is just solid and deep all the way through, front to back, with now not only now with the players, but now with the coaching to match as well. This is the one team that I don't see a lot of holes in. Of course, you can always talk about the receivers themselves, but that's just not what they've been doing. They've bulked up on the tight ends, and that's what they want to do, and that's what they're going to do. So outside of the receiving core not being something to really write home about, probably the weakest receiving core in the division, but with what they do and how they run their offense and how they're going to start to win games, I don't think it's really going to matter. And this is the team that I'm going to say is going to have about 10 wins and win that division.
Man, Alex, with the hot take here, man, I did not expect you to take the Patriots. We've talked about them a little bit off the mic, but I did not realize you were this high on this team. I like this team as well, Alex. You hit on a lot of different points there. Mike Gesicki and Juju Smith-Schuster, I like what you said. They're both going to add some reliable targets, some guys that can move the chains for Mac Jones. Now, I do think the firepower from an offensive standpoint is a real concern. But everything else you said, and you did mention that, but everything else you said, I think actually makes a ton of sense. Christian Gonzalez from Oregon, we talked a ton about him in the draft episodes, how much we love this guy, number one cornerback in this class, number one defensive player in this class, an absolute steal where they got him. I think he has the potential to be a legit shutdown corner for this team. I like their next pick too, that they had Keon White. You talked about him, edge defender, a versatile guy. This defense, I think, is going to be really solid. It always is under Bill Belichick. Like I said, I think the offense is going to be the question mark. I think it should be improved. Like I said, I just don't know if there's enough firepower in this deep AFC East, but Tyquan Thornton is going to be key. And you talked about him as well, the rookie wide receiver from last year. I think he has to stay healthy and has to be a consistent home run hitter in this offense because they desperately need one. I think he has to emerge as that for this offense if they're going to be the AFC East champs like you predicted here, Alex. Now, Ramondre Stevenson really had a nice year last year, averaged 5 yards per carry, had 69 catches. They're going to need another big year from him. There's a lot of people, including Vegas, that has them finishing fourth in this division. I wanted to hit on this before we wrap up here, Alex, because there's a lot of people in the media and there's a lot of hot takes going around right now that if Bill Belichick and this team finishes fourth, misses the playoffs, has a rough season, that they're going to fire Bill Belichick. I don't know about you, Alex, but I call bullshit. What do you think about all these hot takes about Bill Belichick possibly being on the hot seat?
The only reason I like it is because maybe they'll come and get Josh McDaniels from the Raiders. But anyway, I say that, no, I don't believe that at all. I think this guy has his own pink slip to write. And what I mean by that is when he decides to retire is when they'll part ways. I don't think for one second the success that they've had, even going through the Tom Brady drama and everything that happened, that they would move on from him. There is no successor. The one successor that we believe they had is currently in Vegas, but please come take him. We'll pay for the ticket. So, but other than that, no, I don't see. And I guess maybe now Bill O'Brien is there, so maybe there's a potential. There could be something there. Should Bill? But I think this is Bill's story to write its own ending. I don't think the team will write the ending. I think this is Bill's story that he'll be able to write his own ending.
Yeah, I'm with you, Alex. I just can't believe the narrative, and I'm starting to see it more and more this offseason because so many people are down on this team, because so many people, like I said, are picking them to finish last in this division. There's a lot of noise starting to build that Bill Belichick could be on his way out. I don't buy it for a second. You don't move off of the greatest coach in NFL history just because he had a quote-unquote down season. I don't buy it at all. And I'm not nearly as high on them as you are, Alex, but I have a hard time thinking that this team is not competitive. And I think the only way that they even would even maybe consider moving off of Belichick is if this team completely fall apart, and I don't think that's going to happen at all. I just don't see it. This team is going to be too talented, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and they're going to be too well coached for them to completely implode, and I think that's the only way something like that could even maybe happen. So, guys, that is going to do it for today's episode. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to our friends at The Tailgate Foodie for sponsoring today's episode. Be sure to check them out at thetailgatefoodie.com. I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.